is everything that we worked for all season long. All the sacrifices we've made to each other, dog. Every single day, dog. Every single minute. It's gonna pay off. They say hard work pay off, man.
Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
Devin, how are you?
I'm well.
Good. And we have a guest on this week. We have our good friend, Mr. Spencer Wixom, to join the show. Spencer, how are you?
Doing great and excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. And, you know, for those, you know, when everybody starts listening here, we'll have this out this afternoon. But when you're listening, today's episode is going to be heavy on the draft, big time heavy on the draft. So if you're not into the NBA draft, that's okay. Spencer and John are going to have some fun with draft talk. So, but before we get into that, guys, NBA finals, we have a game set for Sunday. Game 7.
Oh, man, that game last night. The funny thing about this series is all of them have been double-digit wins, but they're still exciting.
Yeah.
And the drama from last night, the intensity of the fourth quarter, the awfulness of the refs on both sides, so it all works out. But you know,
the refereeing's been bad this entire series. Can we all agree on that, on both sides?
Yeah, I think so.
So
yeah, I mean, it balances out, I guess. But, you know, there are so many non-calls that they have, but honestly, at least two of the calls that were against Curry were ones I wouldn't have made. Mm-hmm. But to actually watch Steph Curry lose it and hit a fan with his mouthpiece and get ejected for the first time in his career, that's something you don't forget.
No.
I watched it live when Steph Curry lost it.
They started calling the game really tight from the very beginning, and that's when they picked up a lot of those fouls. I think they just, after all of the drama of the series, they really wanted to try and tighten the game up. But I think they over-tightened it, like you said, but... It was crazy. I don't know about you guys, but there was about 6 minutes left and they were down by, I don't know what it was, 12. And it still felt like the Warriors were going to come back, but it just never happened.
Well, and can I say this too? Cleveland set the tone last night from the get go. Uh-huh. So you're right. It was a tightly called game from a referee standpoint, but I think that had to do with the aggressiveness and the chippiness of Cleveland. They came out and they set the tone early. And they did not hold back on it for the rest of the game.
They set some hard picks, and so I agree with that.
And what was funny is the tight calls. I mean, Kevin Love only played 3 minutes in the first half because he had three fouls. And then in the second half, I think he wound up with 11 minutes total where Tyronn Lue just kind of went, you know what, we're kind of better off without Kevin Love on the floor. Let's just play Richard Jefferson these crucial minutes instead. And it worked.
We've seen a lot in the grand spectrum of NBA basketball over the course of this finals. We've seen up and down, you know, at the torrid pace of game five. It was ridiculous. The torrid pace. I mean, it was back and forth, fast, fast. Both teams lost their legs. And then last night we see a physical game. We see early on the lights out shooting from both teams. I mean, we've had everything in this NBA finals to this point.
And, you know, this is a finals between the two best players in the NBA.
Oh, absolutely.
And that really kind of says what it takes to win championship in the NBA. And the two best players in the NBA are there. And third best player almost got there.
Yeah, it's been great to watch those two best players in LeBron James and Klay Thompson going back and forth.
Hey. Oh.
No, let's be honest here. Steph Curry did not show up last season in the finals. They won, but there's a reason that Iggy got the MVP, not Steph. And this year, you've seen kind of the same thing. He got his points last night, lost his composure, had some bad calls. But to me, he's not the most consistent guy on the Warriors.
Well, and I'm glad Devin brought that up. And I'm going to go a step further. I don't know if it's Steph not showing up. I think Cleveland from the get-go in this series decided that they were going to do everything they can to make Steph Curry's nights virtually impossible. And they've defended him. They've trapped him. They've played really well. And Steph really hasn't had a good game. Last night, what I thought was his best game of the series. Would you two not agree?
Well, I mean, Steph had 30 points. Klay Thompson had 25. Steph was minus 11. Klay was minus 22. But the way the Cavs are playing Steph is they're constantly touching him. They're never letting him breathe. They always have their hand on him. They're always bumping him. And that's something the Thunder did in their series as well. And yeah. Cleveland hadn't been doing it as much in the beginning. And they're doing it more and more now. And, you know, a lot of the times they get away with it. And it affects his game. He doesn't like getting that physical. That's why he likes shooting from 30 feet away because no one's near him.
And for
he can make it.
For all those who want to complain about it, I'm just going to say we're Jazz fans, so don't complain about it, because we've complained about the fact that our guys have been held all season long, so I have no problem watching it happen on the grandest scale.
Yeah,
I mean,
I agree with that.
I mean, look at Gordon Hayward. How often did he get held in close, tight-knit games in the fourth quarter all season long? I mean, I bet we could go back and count and probably not even make it with two hands. It'd be a lot more than that. So watching it happen on a grand scale with the MVP, I'm not going to say that I have any sort of, you know, sympathy for him at all right now.
The reason that Cleveland has been so successful in my eyes is Tristan Thompson. Because as a big man, the way he handles the pick and that he switches onto Curry, there are very few big men in the NBA that can switch onto Curry and stay with him.
Favors being one of them, I would add.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, I agree with you. I'm probably the biggest Tristan Thompson hater there is. I gave them so much crap for giving that contract to him. But he's played. I mean, he really surprised me last night, and I was impressed. He played great. If he can continue to do that, I mean, the interesting aspect of that is, do they continue forward next season with Kevin Love? I mean, what did he get 12 minutes last night? Do you really want to be playing a superstar 12 minutes?
Right.
a max contract superstar.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, the money.
Exactly. No, Spencer, I saw you say something on Twitter last night too. I just want your brief thoughts on this, but I two games in a row, we've watched LeBron James go off for 40 plus. And last night, okay, I've been saying this all along, that I feel like LeBron's needed to just take over games, and that's never been his style. Last night in the third and fourth quarter, he literally took over the game. I saw you tweet last night. I know you're not huge on LeBron, but you recognize, you know, how good he is. What are your thoughts?
So I've hated LeBron from the day he came into the NBA. I just don't like him. I can't point my finger exactly what it is. I mean, it's his attitude. It's the way he holds himself. I've never loved him, but I've always been willing to admit how great he is. And I just think that he's been disrespected by fans for the last 3 years almost. I mean, since the year Kevin Durant won the MVP, I mean, he deserved it. But I think that we've kind of forgotten how great LeBron is as fans. We're always talking about Curry and Durant because they have the flashy shooters, and we love that now. But we don't recognize how great he is. And he really is, even though Curry's the MVP, LeBron's far and away the best player in the NBA still.
And your thoughts, if we're talking big if, Cleveland were to pull out game 7, where does that notch LeBron? I mean, to come back from 3-1, never been done in the NBA finals. and I was just talking to Devin before we even got on. I feel like LeBron's got another 30-plus game coming on Sunday. I could see him doing it. He's going to lay it all out there. You know he will. Where does that put him?
I personally, I've always thought LeBron was on par with Michael Jordan. He's the not necessarily the best, but as good as the best that we've ever seen. So I'd say that he's 1B to Michael Jordan's 1A. He's so remarkable. We've never seen anyone have so much control over games like he does and impact it. And I don't think we've ever seen anyone make their teammates better than LeBron does. He's so good at that. He makes everyone better. And it's incredible to watch. And so I think if they come back, it's going to be something that we remember forever. And I think he's needed something like that to really cement him in history books. I think that people tend to forget what he's done. He's had some moments where he's flamed out in the playoffs. And so he really needs something like that to help people remember his remember him as one of the greats.
Now, I'm going to ask you this, and you can say, no, I'm not going to go there. But as a person who is not particularly fond of LeBron, who are you cheering for on Sunday night? Do you want to see history, or do you want to see Golden State get a second one?
Oh, so it's been hard because I found myself really torn in this playoff series because I hate LeBron and I hate Cleveland. I always have. And I find myself slowly rooting for him at times, where on the other hand, I've always loved Golden State and the way they play. And so it's really weird. I don't know. I think that I'm still rooting for Golden State just because they're proving everything that I believe in basketball. And so I want to see that be successful. And so that's what I've been rooting for. I mean, if I had a team, I would run it very similar to the way they do. And I don't know. I think I'm rooting for the Warriors, but I also always have this little thing where I like to cheer for the underdog, and they've definitely been that, and they're fighting away. So I'm pretty impartial. I'll be happy either way as long as we have a good game.
All right. So John, Spencer, Devin, before we get on to draft talk, I want predictions. Game seven. Who do you pick? Who wins game seven and ultimately the series? We'll go to you first, Spencer.
Oh man. So I Golden State needed to win that game last night. You give people a one game scenario and anything will happen if teams have players as good as they do in this stage. I still think that the Warriors are going to win. But a lot of it depends on how Iguodala's back is doing. If he looked terrible last night and couldn't run around at all. If he's better, then they're going to win. If not, then I think Cleveland will. So it really comes down to whoever's back is good. I think it's going to be a close game though. And I think that the person that wins won't win by more than five.
All right. So Spencer says Iggy is the key. All right, John.
That's along the lines I was thinking. They don't have Bogut. Not that he's been crucial, but he has been at least a rotation player. He's been playing those 12, 14 minutes in the starting position. And last night that seemed to hurt him. I mean, Cleveland was able to get the jump on him right away. Iggy looked really bad last night. I don't know how healthy he's going to be Sunday. If they can make Iggy look like old man again, Cleveland wins. I think whoever's ahead at halftime is going to win the game. And I kept thinking that one of these games would be close, and none of them have. And it wouldn't surprise me if that happens again. But because it is in Golden State, I see the crowd getting behind them. And so I see the Cavs able to keep doing what they're doing. But I see Golden State being able to play off the emotions of their crowd and bring them back. Ultimately, I really have no idea. I'd be happy either way. If you could tell me whichever result would result in the Warriors having a worse record next year, that would be the result I'd be rooting for. So, you know, if Warriors win second in a row, that's cool for them. If Cleveland wins, that's cool for them. Ultimately, I guess I don't really care who wins. I'm just excited to watch.
All right.
Have you guys seen the Vegas line?
No, I haven't.
Let's hear your guesses on where it is. I just barely looked it up.
Well, let's see. Games 5 and 6 were right around the 5, 6.5 point area. I'd have to say game 7's probably 3.
Okay. What do you think, John?
I'd probably put it at 2.
It's Golden State by 5.
What?
Wow. Yeah,
I was expecting it to be more of a pick'em, but there you go.
Wow.
That's what Vegas thinks.
Okay, huh. Devin, who's your pick for Sunday?
Well, here's what I expect. I expect that they're going to put Kevin Love on the floor to start. He's going to hard foul Curry and both players are going to be out of the game, which would benefit Cleveland. No.
Wow.
I've got this whole scenario in my mind where I'm like, you know what? There's a way to win this game, and it takes care of both teams all at once. But here, I think Spencer's got it right. I think it's going to be a close game. I don't know that it'll be within five. I think it's going to maybe be in that 6, 7, 8 range. It wouldn't surprise me, but it's going to be under 10. We had this conversation a week or two ago about who I thought would win the series.
Right.
And you remember what I said?
You said Cleveland, and so did I.
No, I did not.
You didn't say Golden State?
I said Golden State in six.
He said Golden State. Oh. We said Cleveland.
Okay.
And I explained that this was because you can be happy or you can be right. And I'm going to stick with that today, and I'm going to say that Golden State will win because of the home crowd and just, you know, I think Steph Curry will be a little more under control. I think they'll want it more. But really, I'm saying that because I'm either going to be happy when Cleveland wins or I'm going to be right when Golden State wins.
All right.
Well, that requires Tyronn Lue going up to Kevin Love and saying, sweep the leg. And Kevin Love going, but we can beat these guys. And then Lou saying, I don't want them beaten.
Oh, we just went with a little Karate Kid reference there. Nicely done, John. Nicely done. I'm going to say I've stuck with Cleveland. Our preseason predictions, I said Cleveland. I said Cleveland 2 weeks ago. I'm going to stick with Cleveland right now. This game is not going to be a blowout like the rest of them have been. I think this is going to go down to the wire. And really, wouldn't it be every NBA junkie's dream for this game to go either to overtime or to go down to the last second shot for either of these teams? I think it would be great. And you'd have the ball in Curry's hand on one side of the ball and LeBron's hand on the other, and you're just going to have a shootout between the two of them. That's what I would hope for. That's what I want to see. And you guys talk about Iggy being critical for Golden State. I want to say that the third scorer for Cleveland is going to be critical. Is it going to be Love putting up 25 or 30, or is it going to be J.R. Smith coming alive like he did in game five? Or four, whenever it was. It's going to depend on that for Cleveland. They need that third scorer to come up and step in. But I'm still picking Cleveland. So, all right. Okay. That's our final stock. We'll see where we're at next week. Let's jump into the draft. This is where you guys want to geek out and have fun with. So let's talk. Jazz, number 12th pick. Ready and go.
Who will take the 12th pick? Is that what you said?
I said Jazz with the 12th pick. Ready and go. You know what?
Oh, all right. Well, I wanted to... I've pulled up Draft Express. I've pulled up Chad Ford. I've been to Draft Express and been watching all their videos. Spencer has been doing hours and hours of work. You would think he writes for a site with the amount of work he's been doing on it. And then I have his picks as well. I think what we can all agree on is that Ben Simmons is going number one, and Brandon Ingram is going number two. And then we have the next 3 through 8 seem to be pretty decided. Although what I found interesting in going through your top 30, you didn't have 3 through 8 quite the same as everybody else, because you have Wade Baldwin as your 8.
Yeah,
why do you value Wade Baldwin that high?
I love Wade Baldwin. He's last year, anyone who follows me, I get really into the draft. Last year, my guy was Stanley Johnson. I think he showed a lot this year. He didn't get a ton of chances because of their loaded rotation, but he showed a lot. But I just really like Wade Baldwin. He's my guy this year. He reminds me of a Kyle Lowry, George Hill type player who he's a strong combo guard. I picture him with the Jazz, and there's so many things you can do with him. You can play him with so many different players. I think he sees the floor well. He's a pretty good defender. He shoots well. He still has to work on his shot, granted, but I think he's got the potential to shoot well. I think he's a pretty complete point guard, and especially in this day of age in the NBA. I mean, this guy's pretty athletic. People won't believe it, but he actually tested out more athletic at the combine than Russell Westbrook. The problem, I think, is that he needs to work on his handle. If he works on his handle more, then he'll be able to access that athleticism, because you don't see it a ton when you watch him play. And I think it's because his handle limits some of that. So I think as his handle improves, his athleticism will really shine, and he's going to really be able to dominate, especially in NBA spacing. So he's kind of the guy I love. I like him a lot more than most people. I have him in the top eight. Let's see. Draft Express has him 15 on their rankings, and Chad Ford has him at 11. So I'm having him a little higher than everyone else. And then the biggest faller out of that top eight for me was Buddy Hield. I'm just not a fan.
Yeah. What worries you most about his game? Because I have a feeling if Buddy Hield falls to 12, Jazz take him.
I think they would too. I mean, I think I've seen some crazy comparisons thrown out here for this draft. I mean, people are comparing Ben Simmons to LeBron James, who we're just talking about as either the greatest or second greatest player in NBA history. People are comparing Brandon Ingram to Kevin Durant. I've seen people compare Chris Dunn to John Wall. I mean, I've just seen some crazy things, but people are comparing Buddy Hield to James Harden. And I just don't see that. I see him more as a J.R. Smith type player. I think he's a good shooter. But the thing that worries me about him is I really get nervous about NBA seniors who didn't do anything in their first 2 years. And that scares me. So he didn't do much his first 2 years. And then as he's older, he also starts to become better and starts dominating younger players. And that always makes me pretty nervous. And I tend to avoid players of that ilk. I think he's good. I just think he's overrated. I mean, I would, if the Jazz picked him at 12, I would not be upset whatsoever, because I think he fits a lot of what they like and need, but he's just not my cup of tea, I guess.
Before we get too deep into this, I feel like this is an appropriate time to bring this up. You and I had an interesting conversation last week while we were playing ball. And I know the draft is so difficult, but I want people to understand where you stand on this subject. Really difficult when we're comparing, because I know how you and I feel about this. We talked about this. We don't like to put comps or comparisons to players, but when it comes to draft, you almost have to, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that thing I released on Twitter last night had my player comps. When I do player comparisons, I'm more looking at how someone plays, not necessarily their ceiling. But I hate player comparisons when you're comparing in twofold. I hate them when you're comparing them to someone who's an all-time great. I think it's unfair to any 19-year-old, 20-year-old. I mean, you're comparing Ben Simmons to one of the best players in NBA history and expecting him to meet that. Now, the problem with that is the player's not going to be able to meet that standard. If he does, great. But if he doesn't, I mean, then he's always looked at as kind of a bust. I mean, people are underwhelmed with what Andrew Wiggins been able to do. That was because he was compared to to LeBron James as well. And I think that he's been very good, but people are underwhelmed because of that. So I just think player comparisons for a lot of, in a lot of senses are unfair.
I'm on the same page there. For the record, I'm not underwhelmed by Andrew Wiggins. I'm really not, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you should be. I mean, he looks like a number one draft pick, and he's still like 20. He's incredibly young.
Exactly.
So he's going to improve, but yeah. So with his player comps, as you look at him, I think you need to look more, okay, he's similar to this player. He plays like this. But I just don't like dubbing the ceiling of a player, because honestly, who knows what someone's ceiling is. You look at players like Draymond Green, who fell to like 31 in the draft, and it happens. People are a lot better than people think, because you're trying to project, not only are you trying to project what they did on the court, you're trying to project what they will do in a different game. I mean, it's almost like taking players from a different sport, trying to project what they're going to do in another sport.
And for all intents and purposes, a player like Draymond Green, it's like I look at him, for example, since we're using him as an example. I mean, there's got to be players in the draft like this where you look at him and it's not so much a comp for him. It's like, you look at the player, and he has no physical qualities that really overwhelm you as an NBA prospect. He just doesn't. but he has all the intangibles. And I think sometimes that's where we want to look at in comps when it comes to the draft. What do these players offer in the intangibles and in the fundamentals that are comparable to another player in the draft? Am I right? Or, I mean, in the NBA?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. The other thing I hate about comparisons, and I know David Locke talks about this a lot, but I hate when you're comparing someone to a player who is the only person similar to that player. I mean, what I mean is like you'll see big point guards who can't shoot all get compared to Sean Livingston. Well, if there's only one Sean Livingston, there's probably a reason for it.
Exactly.
You get small point guards who can't shoot but are good passers get compared to Andre Miller. And so you just get these comparisons that it's like, well, wait. We should stop and think about this. If that player is being compared to someone who is the only player in NBA history who's ever had that skill set and made it work, are we really being real with ourselves?
Right. So. All right. Sorry to get off on that tangent for a second, John, but carry on where you guys were at. Sorry.
Well, I agree with player comparisons. I would actually say they used to be worse. I think they used to always say these are the people's ceiling, because I remember one year it was like Marcus Haislip is the next David Robinson, and just all these insane comparisons.
The best and one at NBADraft.net. I mean, they're great, but they throw player comparisons for everyone. Someone tweeted that this me the other day, and they had a who was it? It was a I'm just blanking on his name, Deshaun. What was the guy we drafted?
Stevenson?
Yeah, Deshaun Stevenson. They had him compared to Michael Jordan. So, I mean, I agree. I think that player comparisons have improved over the years, but I still think that, I mean, if you look at some of the ones of what fans, I mean, I haven't heard many of the top NBA analysts comparing these players to the greats like a lot of fans are, but I do think that fans get a little carried away with them. That's why, I mean, people may look at my player comparisons and be underwhelmed with a lot of these players, but I think it's realistic. So,
yeah, let's go over player comparisons. Ben Simmons, you likened him to a Lamar Odom, Blake Griffin type.
Yeah, he's very unique. So I couldn't figure out just one player that he resembles the most. But I mean, he's one of the best passers we've ever seen. Come in at 6'10". I don't think I've seen someone that great. But he really does remind me a lot of the way they used Lamar Odom, but in kind of a Blake Griffin body. And Blake Griffin's got some pretty similar skill sets. I mean, you see Blake Griffin handle the ball a lot. You see him play as a point forward and make excellent passes. He's really explosive and athletic. Now he shoots more like Blake Griffin than he does Lamar Odom did, but hopefully that can develop. But that's kind of who I see him being. I think that he's an all-star player, and I think he's going to, he should be the number one pick, and he will be. And I think he'll be great. I'm excited to see him in summer league.
Yeah. Brandon Ingram, you compared to Tayshaun Prince. That might sound underwhelming. It's hard to remember how good Tayshaun Prince used to be. We all think of him as that cog on the Detroit championship team.
Well, I look at his size alone, 6'10", 196. He's not a very big guy. I mean, from a girth standpoint, I mean, the guy's just okay. Devin, give me the weird look. Maybe bad choice of words. He's just a skinny guy, right?
I'm 5'8" and I weighed more than him at one point.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. He's tiny. That's what worries me the most about him.
And 6'10", 196. So that's like a Jeremy Evans almost.
Yeah, well, yeah. And to put a comparison on that with a Tayshaun Prince type, I mean, Prince wasn't that big of a guy either. He was quite underwhelming in size himself, but what he brought to the game was crazy good on both ends of the floor.
He was an incredible player. He was a borderline all-star for many, many years. He was great. I mean, his career averages were, like I said, it's probably an underwhelming comp for people, but I liked Prince more than that. But he was like a 13 and 5 and 4 player throughout his career who played great defense and was a pretty good player. I just see him more in that mold. I hate the Kevin Durant comparisons with him, because if people go back and look at their college stats, it's incredible the difference between the two, because Kevin Durant dominated him in every statistic there is. Kevin Durant was the most productive freshman college basketball has ever seen. So to compare a guy who was kind of subpar to that, I don't know. I don't like that comparison, but it's not meant in a negative sense, that comparison to Tayshaun Prince. I think he's probably got, he has a much higher ceiling than that. I just think he'll be used in a similar way.
Now, Jamal Murray,
I take him second overall. So
I'm
not down on him. I just, yeah.
Jamal Murray played point guard, but you see him turning more into a shooting guard in the CJ McCollum mode.
I think that he's very similar to CJ McCollum. CJ McCollum played backup point guard for Portland. So I think you see him starting at shooting guard with a good point guard. And then you see him taking over as the backup point guard, or being able to play with a point guard in spot minutes. I don't think you rely on him as that, because I really like having him off ball some, because he's such an amazing spot up shooter. So I think if you play him with a good point guard, they make an awesome combo.
That would suggest Murray has a pretty decent handle then when it comes to the ball. I mean, if he can play point.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a pretty good handle. I think he's an excellent passer. He gets underrated for his passing, I think. But if people don't remember, I mean, he was playing with Tyler Ulis, who had the ball in his hands basically every second. And so he put up 20 points at playing off ball and not being able to have the ball in his hands. But when he did have the ball in his hands, I thought he was really great. He had good floor vision. He was crafty and able to finish at the rim, and had nice floaters. And I just saw a lot that I really liked there.
Okay. Now,
I mean, he put up numbers. Sorry. He put up numbers that CJ McCollum did as a senior, as a freshman at a better school. So,
okay. Well, that's another guy that's not going to follow the Jazz.
No, but he is one guy I would be willing to trade up for. There's not many guys I'd be willing to trade up for in this draft, but if he fell to six, like I've seen in some draft mocks, I would definitely jump up for him. I think he'd be a perfect fit for the Jazz.
Oh, that reminds me of one of the fake GM trades. Who was it? Someone. I think they traded Rudy and number 12 to Boston.
Oh yes, I saw that. I saw that.
Yeah, I'm the biggest Jamal Murray fan there is in the world, and I thought that was terrible.
I don't know.
I'll say on record that Spencer is the only fake GM that came up with a trade I liked so far in the series.
Thanks. I didn't get killed like some of these other people.
Okay, what was that trade? I think I missed it.
So I propose that the Jazz trade the 12th pick and Trey Burke. And Trey Burke was more for salary purposes, but also because he kind of fit what Denver needed in a backup point guard. So Trey Burke and the 12th pick and the 60th pick for Wilson Chandler and the 19th pick. So trade back a little, pick up who I think is a really good rotation player if healthy. It's a gamble, but it's one. I mean, I think if you want a player who's better than just a role player playing role player minutes, you have to take gambles like that.
Well, and so. Chandler, you're saying you're concerned about health, but if he's going to play 10 to 12 minutes a game in a backup role, that probably isn't going to be much of a risk.
That's the thing. You play him maybe 20 minutes a night, and where he's been playing 30 minutes a game his career, clearly that hasn't worked. You start reducing his role and the burden on him some, and have him come in and just be incredible off the bench and spot starter when either Hood or Hayward gets hurt. I think he'd fit our team perfectly. He can be a 3-4 combo player, stretch the floor. He rebounds the ball really well for his size, and he's tough as nails. I mean, people loved Booker for that. But Wilson Chandler is a player who does that, but is actually good at basketball. So.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. That second unit lineup of Burks and Chandler, and throw in Lyles in that, is not a bad option.
And like, Mac. I mean, even yeah. I like Mac a lot as our backup. I mean, it would be a pretty awesome lineup. I mean, he's pretty similar. I think he's better because he's more athletic than Jared Dudley, but he's a pretty similar player. I mean, a lot of people love that Jared Dudley option, but he's a little younger, and I don't know. I think it'd be awesome. Granted, there's risk, but I think you're moving back 7 spots in a draft where I don't think it matters. I mean, I think that the tiers.
Agreed. Agreed.
I think the difference between 12 to 17 or to 12 to 19 is definitely not Wilson Chandler. So,
and you're trading a guy who's getting a lot of DNP CDs for a guy who'll actually be part of your rotation.
Exactly. Yeah, Trey Burke's gone, anyways. Everything I've heard from people is that have their inside sources. They tried to basically give Trey Burke away at the trade deadline, and it didn't work. They tried to package him in any way they could, and no one fit. And so I think that Trey Burke's gone. His parents are his agents, and they're really upset with his role. And I think that if you don't get rid of him this offseason, you start to have Enes Kanter drama where he's demanding trades, and on the radio, his agent's on the radio demanding trades, and
which is just bad really for the chemistry that's already starting to build well here anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you would see him take a shot, and you'd see players like Hayward just put their head down. And so I think he's gone. I think that if they can't find someone to take him at draft night, as a backup point guard for free or for a second round pick, then I could see them cutting him. He's on his last year of his rookie contract, so it's not that difficult to do.
See, I've been listening to a lot of the national NBA guys, and one thing that's come up is that there are going to be a few teams who are going to need a backup point guard. That they said that backup point guards is actually kind of scarce, and I actually do think there'll be a little bit of a market for Trey Burke. A small low priority market, but one nonetheless. I think they will be able to find someone.
Yeah, I think what I think Trey Burke is I think he's the perfect throw in a deal where you have a deal and the other team's kind of waffling on it, and you say, well, what if we include Trey Burke? You get a backup point guard, you get to test him out on his last year of his rookie contract. If you like it, you get it. You have the rights to extend him. If not, you can let him go. So that's the way I think he'll be used.
Okay, maybe John. This lottery pick just needs a new scenery. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Maybe you're trading the 42nd pick and Trey Burke to get back up to 30 or something like that. 31. I mean, it's not going to be a deal that impresses fans. That's for sure. Cause I think they overvalue him. But hey, I think it's better for the chemistry. So it makes sense.
So I don't know.
I don't know how you overvalue him when he's not playing at all.
I know. And we've got, I mean, Raul Neto and Shelvin Mack and Dante Exum are all better than him. Can you really go into the season with 4 point guards?
Yep.
True.
Which is why it's so weird to me how often in mock drafts, the Jazz are shown taking Wade Baldwin or Dejounte Murray, or, you know, some of these point guard types are going to be available right there and might.
Yeah. My reasoning for that, I mean, I think you just, I personally believe you always take the best player. Now, I believe that the logic for some of these national guys picking a point guard to Utah is flawed and saying that, oh, they need some point guard help, so they're going to pick a point guard. I don't think that's true. I think if they pick a point guard, it's because they believe it's the best person. And then they easily have a lot of flexibility with their other point guards. I mean, you can easily flip Neto. I think he's proved that he's worth something, so someone will take him. I think that you can cut Burke. Mac is unguaranteed next year, or actually this year. So you have to pick up his option anyways. So I think there's flexibility with those point guards that if you pick one up in the draft, you can move on from some of the others and be okay. But I don't think that you pick one just because, hey, Jazz didn't have a good point guard last year. They need a point guard.
Okay, let's segue into that. Let's talk about the Jazz 12th pick. I hope I'm not jumping ahead on you, John, but let's talk about the 12th pick. You have Murray listed, but let's talk about some of the players that are available. And I want you two to give your thoughts and ultimately what you think the Jazz will do with that pick.
Okay. So with the 12th pick, I a lot of people think they're making a trade with the 12th pick. I kind of don't. I'm leaning more towards they keep it. I would rank the scenarios that they keep it. After that, the most likely I would say is trade out, and then most likely is trade down. The least likely is trade up. I think they keep it with the way that I'm seeing mock drafts work out. I think the rankings you have in front of you are how I would rank those players. So I would take whoever's the best available from there, because I do think that the Jazz could use help at just about every position. We need depth more than anything. So build up depth and get the best player that you think is there is the way I would go. Personally, I heard that the Deontay Davis workout was the best one of the year so far. They're really liking him. I kind of think that that's the player they're leaning towards if he's there. If not, I think that a Jakob Poeltl makes a lot of sense. And then from there, I think that they'd go with one of the point guards after that.
I've been wondering if they're considering Furkan Korkmaz from Turkey. He's a really skinny guy. He seems to be another one of those potential guys, but he's also a guy that is probably going to be overseas a year or two before he comes over, like Dario Saric. And I wonder if they might take a look at him and go, maybe we can just use this on him. Because they have a ton of guys under contract anyway, and they really need help now. And maybe they look at someone like him and say, we'll do the Dario Saric thing. We'll use our high pick on him, who we think is going to be really good down the line.
And then store.
Let him play overseas. And meanwhile, we're still free a roster spot here and now to get some veteran help.
Yeah, I could see it. I haven't heard him. Any opinions from anyone from the Jazz about Korkmaz? I will say that the Jazz, I think, scout internationally better than any other team in the NBA. So they've seen him live multiple times. They know who he is. I'm sure they've talked to his coaches and they've got connections. I mean, he's also got the Turkish background, so maybe Mehmet Okur's helped them some. To get some connections there to talk to him, but I'm sure they've explored all options there. I personally think if they draft Furkan, they're going to bring him over. I mean, he has a $2 million buyout. It was a little different than the scenario with Saric, because he was saying up front that he didn't want to come to the NBA for 2 years. I think that you can get him over. And I think if you can, you do it, just because I don't believe in the development of players in Europe. I mean, if you look at a lot of the prospects, I mean, people get surprised about like Dragan Bender being drafted and having barely played any minutes in Europe. Furkan's played somewhat limited minutes in Europe as well. And it's because those European teams have no incentive to develop these players because they know they're leaving. So they play the best player at the time. They don't spend their time trying to develop someone. So I don't know. I'd be nervous about having him develop. I'd bring him over if you can, but I could see them doing that much. I could see them doing that further with second round picks, or maybe I think that a plausible option is them trading a couple seconds and some cash and getting back into the late first. And you could do something like that there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think of Ricky Rubio, who stayed overseas 2 years, and he did not improve in those 2 years.
I mean, honestly, players in Europe don't, unless they're ready to contribute to that team right then. The coaches don't care at all about their NBA development because what's it to them? So,
unless you're Fran Vasquez or Ante Tomic,
yeah,
and just never come over.
Yeah, well, I mean, that with Tomic, the player he was good enough that he was getting starter minutes, and they wanted to play him, because if you're good enough to get starter minutes, then great, but they just don't really waste their time with the players who aren't at that level yet. But I think Furkan could be an option. I am leaning towards the point where I'd kind of be surprised if they pick him there, just because I think that they're in love with Davis, and I think that if Poeltl's there, I think they'd take him as well.
Okay.
Yeah, when I watched the video, I was thinking Derek Favors as well, and I see everyone else is having the same thoughts. He just,
yeah, he's a really
took a while similar. To get to where he is now, but yeah, very, very similar.
Who was Deontay Davis that again? That was Davis we're talking about?
Yeah, Deontay Davis. I have him compared to Derek Favors. I know Locke brought it up the other day. What's his name? Jonathan Wasserman from Bleacher Report brought that comparison up about in March. And I see it as well. I mean, the other comparisons you can kind of throw out for him are Hassan Whiteside. And he's not as long as Whiteside, but he's kind of a similar player. So those are kind of the players I see him developing into. I think he'd be great because he can play with Trey Lyles. And I think that's really big for any big that we draft. You need to make sure that they can play with Trey Lyles, because last year I think we had issues not being able to play Trevor Booker with Lyles.
One thing I've been seeing, let's say Pirtle's there at 12 and the Jazz take him. Do you think that the Jazz, what do you do with Tibor Plyce? How are they liking his development?
You're asking the wrong guy, because I hate Tibor Plyce as a player. I mean, if it were up to me, I would have cut him already. I don't see anything. I mean, fans keep telling me he's going to develop. The problem is he's turning 27 this year. So it's not like he's a spry chicken with a bunch of years left. He's pretty old. He has no athletic skills whatsoever, in my opinion. His shooting was pretty exaggerated, I think. So I just don't see anything in him. So I would easily move on from him and trade him. If you could trade him, I'd do that in a heartbeat for anything. Otherwise, I'd cut him. It's $3 million on your book this year. It's nothing next year.
I think Jeff Withey got more time than he did for most of the year and was much more effective when he played.
Absolutely. Withey's way better player. I mean, there's something he's good at. I can't find my problem with Plyce is I look at him and I cannot find anything that I think he's good at. Whereas Withey, he's a good rim protector. That's something he does pretty well. So I would cut ties with Plyce if you could, if you draft one of these bigs. And then I think having Withey as your fifth big is a huge luxury, because he's probably a good fourth big for most teams, but having him as a fifth big really gives you that added bonus of depth where you survive through injuries and whatnot.
All right. So we've mentioned his name a couple times, though. I want you to talk about a guy who I really like in this draft, and that is the Utes, Jakob Poeltl, or Jakob Poeltl. I said it wrong. Don't look at me, Devin. I know I'm getting it. I'm getting there. Okay. I like his game. I like his game a lot, and I think it's going to transition to the NBA a lot. And I honestly wouldn't be opposed to taking him on the Jazz. Talk about his game, though. I mean, he's got a few of the intangibles even that should work in the NBA, doesn't he?
Absolutely. I personally really like Jakob. I know that some don't. I mean, Ben Dowsett and I were talking on Twitter last night. He doesn't think he's as laterally mobile as I do. And so there's some people that don't like him, but I think that he's great. I think his biggest issue is he needs to add strength because he does get pushed around. I mean, he's 7'1", but he does get pushed around. He weighs 239. So hopefully he can add some weight and you can beef him up. But I think the Jazz staff can do that. We saw that with Hayward and some of our players last year. But I think he's a long guy. I think he could be a really good defender, because what I see is a guy who can defend the pick and roll very well. I think that he does have that lateral movement and he can switch back and forth. And I just don't see players really blowing by him on the pick and roll. I think that he's a pretty good rebounder and that'll improve as he gets stronger. And I think that he's got some pretty good moves. I mean, he's got great hands. So I think he can catch lobs. He can catch the pass down low.
And he's a good passer.
Pretty good. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say next, is that he's a great passer. And I think that's really important for our bigs. I think he would fit really nicely next to Trey Lyles. And they'd be a great bench unit. And I think eventually he can improve his range. I don't think he's ever a 3-point threat, but I think he can have a really good mid-range game. But I kind of liken him to a Jonas Valanciunas for the Raptors. A lot of people I don't know what people's thoughts are on Jonas, but I think he's a really good player and a really good center. And so having that kind of player off your bench, I think is great. especially next to a Trey Lyles who will spread the floor, and I think they fit really well.
Oh, and back to your lateral movement discussion that you had with Ben. You know, that can be improved upon too. You know, a lot of people can look at that as a problem for a player, but you know, the Utah Jazz have proved with sending players to P3, with their different workouts that they do, that lateral movement can be improved upon in a player. It really can. With the right kind of workouts, suddenly you've got a guy who's learned how to move a little better laterally if he's not already, and be a little bit more mobile and a little better than he was previously.
Yeah, a lot of it's footwork. You've got to figure out how to use the footwork. I mean, this guy's coming from Austria. He doesn't have a ton of basketball experience. That's probably part of it. He does need to learn how to use footwork better, and he hasn't had a staff really working with him on that, I don't think. I mean, the Ute staff is great. The new facility is awesome, but nothing like P3 that would help him. You're right.
Yeah, I think if Pirtle is there at 12, the Jazz take him. I just look at teams above. A lot of people have him going to Toronto. I don't necessarily think Toronto needs him, but Milwaukee's sitting there at 10, and Milwaukee really could use a center, and I wonder if they would really let him slide past. Orlando needs a center too, but they might think they have they might be planning on bringing Dwight Howard back. So who knows what they want to do there?
I think that Milwaukee will, more than anything, I think the reason Pirtle would fall is if they go for a point guard, if they think either DeJounte Murray or Wade Baldwin fits better, because that's a bigger need. I think, I also could see them saying, we have a couple bigs, but none of them can really shoot it, so we want to stretch big and pushing for Pirtle. And that's also what I see Orlando saying and maybe passing up on Pirtle for, is saying, well, we have Vukovic. How similar is Pirtle to Vukovic? Can you really play them next to each other compared to playing Vukovic with a Scal or Henry Ellison, who we think can stretch the floor better? So I could see him falling in that scenario, but I don't necessarily think he should. I have him ranked 10th on my board, so I think he should go higher. So we'll see.
You know, Milwaukee would probably do a straight up swap of Michael Carter Williams for Trey Burke.
If I say no to that, yeah, does everybody hate me?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, is the way to say that I really don't like Michael Carter Williams.
Neither do I.
Yeah. It's funny that he was rookie of the year, that him and Trey Burke were touted as the top two point guards of that draft.
Oh, I know.
And now teams can't give him away.
Well, and I mean, he's on his second team now. His second team already wants to boot him, and he's not even done with his rookie contract. I consider that a huge warning sign.
Yep.
That draft. Oh, that draft. It just wasn't a great draft.
No, it wasn't. Luckily, this draft, I think, is a lot better than that one. I know a lot of people are down on this draft, but I think that there's probably, I don't know, 18 players who are going to be good role players, at least in the NBA. So,
okay, so I was going to ask you that. Outside of the top 10 or 12, and we've talked a lot about most of those guys, let's go 12 through 30. Which player intrigues you most on that list?
Well, as far as the typical 12 through 30 goes, if you're looking at like the Chad Ford 12 through 30, the players who I'm really intrigued with, obviously, let's see, we talked about Baldwin some. I'm really intrigued with him. He's typically ranked in the 15 range. But then there's some players that I really like that most people are pegging to be the late first. I love Patrick McCaw from UNLV. He's a 6'7" shooting guard who can, I think he can play some three eventually when he fills out, because he's skinny as well. He's 180. So he needs to put on some strength, but he's crazy athletic. He's a pretty good shooter with 3-point range. I mean, he's a crazy good in transition. He plays defense really well. He gambles a lot, but I just look at him as an awesome player who's being totally underrated. I think that he's very comparable to Will Barton, and Will Barton had a ton of success this year, and I think he would be a huge addition to the Jazz. And so I think eventually he can guard 1 through 3, And I love the kid. The other guy is Malik Beasley from Florida State. A lot of people are kind of not talking about him. I think it's because of his injury. So he's not really working out with teams right now. He hurt his legs, so he's not working out with teams. But he's crazy athletic. He's a good shooter, and he's a great defender. My comp for him is Wes Matthews. I mean, he's 6'5", so he's not very big, but he's really athletic. He is long. He has like a 6'7" wingspan. So it's a little longer than what his height is. So he gives him some length, but, I don't know. I think that he's a good shooter and he's crazy athletic. And I love the combo of those two, especially if you can play some defense. So those two guys are kind of my 3-and-D wing prospects that I really love.
Okay. One last question on this and then we'll go ahead and move on. Jazz have 3 second round picks. What do you think the most likely thing is that happens with those picks?
I would be surprised if they make any of them, to be honest. I mean, if you look at our roster, we are kind of crunched. We have 14 players under contract right now. That's not including Trevor Booker, who I think's gone, but, I just don't see him bringing in too many rookies. I could see them trading some up and I could see him bringing in 2 rookies into camp, but I'd be kind of surprised because I think they also want to make some additions through free agency. If they do something, I could see him packaging some, like I said, and trading up a player I really like who's projected in the second round. And I don't know why. I mean, let's see. Ford has him at 43 and Draft Express has him at 46 is a Caris LeVert from Michigan. I just think he's a really good player. He's got injury history, but I think at that point in the draft, you've got to take your shots and he is a good player. His risk is injuries. So I'm willing to gamble on that at that point in the draft. If you can get a really good, I mean, he's a 6'7" point guard is really what he is. So he can guard 1 through 3. He's good. Really good passer. He's a pretty athletic. He's a good shooter. I mean, he does everything well. And he kind of reminds me of like a Jamal Crawford. He's the kind of player I'd be targeting in the second round if we make one of those picks.
Yeah. I think they use one on a Euro stash and then the other two, mm-hmm. they either trade up or trade out.
Yeah. I can easily see some Euro stashes there. I think that there's a bunch of Euro players in this draft that people could get excited for for a stash. So that's very possible, especially with the Jazz's fondness for European players and their advanced knowledge of all of them. A couple other players I think are kind of over or underrated. I don't love Denzel Valentine. I think he's actually going to fall in the draft. I think his upside's kind of Rivas Vasquez type player. I know that people love the Timothy Luwawu from France, and he's a popular pick among Jazz fans. But I see him being kind of a CJ Miles type player who's really good, but I don't think you pick him at 12. and then 2 players who I think are being kind of underrated are Diamond Stone out of Maryland. He really reminds me of Zach Randolph. Or Al Jefferson, and then Damian Jones from Vanderbilt. He's also, I think he's a great pick in the late first. He's kind of like a Alex Len. He's a 7'1" athletic big man. So those are some players that I could see people. I could see them rising. I could also see Demetrius Jackson rising, similar to
little Notre Dame love for you, Devin. There you go.
Yeah, Rozier rose in the draft last year, and people were kind of surprised by that. Boston picked him. They probably overdrafted him, but I could see him being the point guard that people overdraft this year. If they don't like the ones on the board, say they don't love Murray and they want a point guard, they could take him. He kind of plays similar to Reggie Jackson.
Now, he did pretty well at the combine in terms of athleticism, did he not?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I want to say he had one of the best vertical jumps that they've seen out of a point guard.
Yeah, he's quick and athletic. He's a great leaper. Part of the problem is that he's not a great 3-point shooter. And then the sad thing is that people look at him at 6'1 and say, oh, he's small for the position now. So I think that's what he's getting nicked for. But I think he's pretty good. I mean, I think that he could become a player similar to Reggie Jackson. And then another player I'd watch is Tyron Prince from Baylor. I know he hasn't been mentioned at all about the Jazz, but he's a pretty good 3-and-D prospect. He's a little older at 21, but he kind of reminds me of Damari Carroll. So he's another guy I'd watch out for. I know that the Jazz worked out Malachi Richardson. I heard that he just totally blew the workout and it was really ugly. I think he's this year's James Young. If you remember a couple years ago in the Rodney Hood, Dante Exum draft, everyone was touting James Young as the hot 3-and-D prospect and got picked before a bunch of players that actually were good. So he could be that prospect this year, I think, where everyone really likes him and he falls.
Bill Simmons was thrilled when James Young fell to Boston.
I think a lot of people were. I was sitting there
not working.
I was shocked that he got picked before Hood. It blew my mind.
Well, so one last prospect that we haven't brought up that I'm curious your thoughts on is, and I've seen his name float around from at least fans' perspectives, but son of NBA great Arvydas Sabonis, his son, I forget his first name already.
Domantas.
What are your thoughts on him?
So I actually like Sabonis. My problem is I don't know if he fits today's NBA as well. I think that a couple years ago, he would have been a top pick in the draft, honestly. He reminds me a lot of Luis Scola. And Luis Scola, I mean, people kind of forget how good he was. He was really good for a long time. He's had his years where he's been kind of bounced around the last couple years and not been as great. Just being a role player. But I mean, my worry is that I don't know if he can play defense. I don't know if he can shoot or stretch the floor. I don't see him as very athletic. And so those things worry me, but he's one of those players who has the intangibles as far as that high basketball IQ. So he's someone that could pull it out.
And
I have him ranked 17th on my board. So if the Jazz drafted him, I wouldn't love it, but I wouldn't be upset because I think that they probably saw that he can shoot it and they have belief that he can stretch the floor. And if he can, then I like him.
It's interesting that you point to his defense like you did too, because I look back at the NCAA tournament when they needed stops in order to win. And I'm thinking about the Ute game in particular. He was their go-to defender and he would switch on guys and defend actually quite well.
Yeah. Yeah, he would. Part of this comes down to his athleticism for me.
Right.
I just don't think that, I mean, he's big. I don't know if he can take if a DeMarcus Cousins is backing him down, there's no way he can cover it.
Right.
Then I worry about him switching on to any point guard in the NBA or even any of the twos or threes. I think he's going to have issue with that because of their athleticism nowadays. So
right.
It comes down to that. Like I said, he has high basketball IQ, so he could pull it together and be one of those good team defenders. I just don't think he'll ever be a good individual defender because of his athleticism.
All right.
But I like him. I don't want to knock on him that much. It sounds like I'm negative on him, but I've talked about him before. The problem is I actually think he's going to go before the Jazz. A lot of people think that's crazy, but I think that he's going to Toronto. So,
well, he's definitely not his dad. Okay. I had to joke about that. I just had to. for those of you young uns who are listening to the show that don't remember back to the day, man, his dad was incredible. He's a great player.
Probably the best passing big that the NBA's seen.
Yeah.
His dad.
And
his dad was so good.
And one of the best foreigners to ever take to the court in the NBA too. So.
Yep.
All right. That's our draft talk. Anything else you wanted to add in there, John, or does that kind of wrap that up?
I think that wraps that up.
All right. So let's briefly talk a little bit of pop culture movies. Spencer, we always ask our guests, what's your favorite movie? What's your favorite TV show?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this. You guys gave me a heads up before the pod started. I've been thinking about this. I'm not a huge movie guy. I know I'm terrible, but since we had a baby, we don't really, it's really hard to get out to convince my wife to go to a movie. So I haven't seen too many new movies lately. One of the last movies I saw that I really liked was The Martian. I don't know what you guys' thoughts were on that one, but I it was really good, I thought. But I tend to, my problem also is that I tend to like every movie I see. So like I'll see anything and think, oh man, that was great. And it may be because I think it was so bad that it made me laugh and I just loved it. But I really will watch almost any movie and be like, that was awesome. So I like a lot of movies. I'll watch anything from comedies. I mean, comedies are probably what I end up watching the most, like pulling them up on my DVR or something. Something like the 22 Jump Street or something like that. I end up going over and over again. That's kind of my movie thing. As far as TV series go, I watch a lot of more TV. Some series I'm loving right now. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think it's one of the underrated comedies right now. It is so funny. The character development's great, I think. So that's one of my favorites. I don't know if any of you or either of you watched Silicon Valley on HBO.
I have not, but I heard some good things about it. In fact, you guys were talking about it at Ball last week. So
yeah, I think it's the funniest show on TV right now. It's a tad inappropriate for some people, so be warned, but it's on HBO, so that should be a warning enough, I guess. But it is hilarious. It's like about a startup company in Silicon Valley, and it's maybe the funniest show on TV right now. Let's see. I get into The Walking Dead, and I get into really anything. I mean, I just finished catching up on The Big Bang Theory. I was missing kind of I was really into How I Met Your Mother. So I was really missing a series to kind of fill that. I was missing a series to kind of fill that void. And I think Big Bang Theory did that pretty well. So I just caught up on that, like that a lot. It was a good movie or a series to watch kind of while I was doing something.
Both of those are excellent choices.
Yeah, they're great. As comedies go, I'm starting Bob's Burgers right now because I was a big fan of Archer. So I watched Archer and then I started watching Bob's Burgers because there's the overlap of writers and stuff. And,
good luck with that one.
Good. I like it. It's something I can watch like while I'm doing my draft breakdowns and stuff like that. I'm always trying to find like mindless TV where I can watch and do something at the same time. And then one series I just finished that I really like was the second season of Daredevil. I thought it was phenomenal and absolutely incredible as far as just about every aspect of that one goes.
Yep. Way to finish that off. We're both fans of that, but both John and I are very big fans of the Daredevil series. So, John, you get out to see any movies this last week?
I did. I saw The Conjuring 2.
And your thoughts?
I liked it. I thought The Conjuring was probably one of the best horror movies this decade. The Conjuring 2. I think Conjuring 2 is good. It's not quite as good as the original, but it still has a lot of good things in it. I like the characters, and I really like how James Wan, director, is with playing with expectations and shadows and tension. You know, the Conjuring claims they're based on a true story, and they are. But then when you read the true stories, you find out just how much they're embellishing. And so The Conjuring 2 is one of those, by the time you get to the end, you're like, if this really happened, this is like absolute proof, 100%, that there are evil demons in this world.
I love movies that do that. So, did you ever see Apollo 18, John?
Apollo 18. No, I heard that was bad.
It was terrible, but they tried to claim it was a real movie like that. And spoiler alert, they all go to space and everyone gets eaten by these rock monsters on the moon. And then they're like, this was a true story. And then at the end, you're like, wait, if this was a true story, how did they get the film back? If everyone died. But anyways, so I love movies like that, that claim it was a true story, but you're like, wait a second.
Oh boy.
Yeah. My favorite movie to do that was Fargo, where they say based on a true story. And the whole thing feels like, gee, it actually might have, could have, even though it's not. But it's still kind of cool to think something like this could have happened. Yeah. So, yeah, I recommend Conjuring 2. My wife and I actually had a private screening because we went to this theater in Provo that has the misfortune of being the oldest theater in that section of town, and newer theaters have sprouted up around it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she jumped a good three times and it had really good tension. And so I liked it. Well, there's one CGI character in there that just pulled me out, that I just went, oh, this is like something Tim Burton would do. And I like it when they keep it, try to make it as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
John likes the realistic demons.
I do like realistic demons.
I'm on the opposite end. I love the scary movies that you watch and you're kind of laughing the entire time. I love watching movies like that. So.
Oh, see, I also loved, did you ever see Your Next?
Yes.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Because you're just laughing the whole time. And the marketing kind of had to hide what the movie really is, which I appreciated, but that meant it didn't do that well at the box office. But that's one of those movies that I keep bringing up to people if they haven't seen it. It's just a really funny horror movie.
Scream.
One of the worst ones. Did you ever see Would You Rather?
Oh, I don't think I saw that one, but I remember hearing about that one.
Got a Brittany Snow in it, actually. But I think it's on Netflix, but it is a hilarious, scary movie about someone who like kind of like saw they kidnap these people and put them in this room, and they have to play a game of Would You Rather with all these crazy, stupid things. And so it was really funny.
I'm going to say Lillard did that for me in Scream. I just laughed at that movie because of Lillard. So, you know, it was, that was just a funny show.
Yeah.
So, I went and saw, by the way, this last weekend, I went and saw Angry Birds. John, I don't know if you've seen it, but
I haven't.
Your kids might enjoy it. It wasn't particularly great.
I heard it was pretty bad.
Yeah. I didn't like it. I can't say I thought it was bad, but I didn't like it necessarily. And my son, you know, I mean, my son knows all about the game and stuff. So if you understand the game, I guess it kind of adds a little bit to it. I mean, you know, the end of the movie, we stuck around during the credits, and they had some post scenes, and my son's like, oh, finally they show those guys. I love those guys in the game. And I was wondering when they were going to show them. I mean, that's what kind of movie you can expect out of this, is like, oh, all right, I recognize that from the game. I recognize that. And okay, I get this. I mean, it's a decent story. I wouldn't say it was great, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's one of those things where there isn't a lot of story to the game. I mean, I understand making a movie out of stuff like Assassin's Creed, but I don't understand Angry Birds. There's not a lot of thought to it. I mean, it's just, you just launch the birds into the pigs. Yeah. Like Tetris, or, you know what? Even Battleship. Battleship has more of a story than Angry Birds.
Well, okay. So, and Angry Birds had this community of birds that were all nice and happy-go-lucky birds except one, and he was the outcast because he always got angry. And in order to beat the pigs at the end, the whole community had to be mad. Had to be angry. So there you go. There's the story in a nutshell.
The kids.
So you're saying you saw an animated movie about an outsider who learns he just needs to believe in himself, and then he can overcome the odds against this villainous force that isn't what they claim to be.
Wow. Huh. to think those actually exist, really? So there you go. That's your movies for the week. All right. Well, we've been going at this long enough. Spencer, you got things to do. John, you got things to do. So let's wrap this up.
I sure do.
Spencer, okay. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Right now, I've kind of taken a break from writing while we had our baby and everything, but you can find me on Twitter at Jazz Jargon. I'm still publishing a bunch of stuff there right now. I've got a workout tracker that I'm constantly posting that's tracking all the stats and rankings and info on all the players that the Jazz have worked out. And then I'll be posting draft rankings and whatnot and analysis throughout the time. The next week through there as well.
All right. Okay. Well, we want to thank Spencer for joining us this week to talk draft, finals, movies, just our usual conversations on the Jedi and Germ Show. Look for us. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, any of your favorite listening locations, Jedi and Germs. Hit us up. Get at us. Let us know what you thought of this week's episode. Take some time to thank Spencer for joining us, because we really appreciate it. So we'll look for you next week. Thanks all for joining us, and go Cavs. Oh, wait, I just said that. Yes. All right. Talk to you later, John. Take us out.
Bye, everybody.